Okay? Are we ready for the next panel? After having two panels discussing the challenges that are existing in shipping today, we are now having a panel that hopefully will discuss some of the possibilities, some of the solutions that might help the industry going forward. We will discuss about digitalization and AI. And together with me, my name is Lars Risberg from MENA. I have a fabulous team here sitting beside me. We have two shipping companies, we have two technology companies, and we have a representative from the regulation part. So first from the shipping companies, we have Mark O'Neill from Columbia Group. Welcome. And we have Tim Ponat from NSB in Germany. We have from the two technology companies, we have Jarden Gross from Orca AI. And we have Angus Wiston from Deep Sea Technologies. And we have George Nowak from Liberian. So let's get started with this topic. And I would like every one of you, one by one, to tell me a little bit, how important is digitalization and AI? How much impact can it have on this industry? We have seen two really serious panels discussing all the challenges that you face every day. And will digitalization and AI, will it make an impact on your industry already today and going forward? Just a few words of how you see this. And let's start with the shipping companies. So Mark, how do you see this topic impacting the industry?
Yeah, good morning, everybody. And thanks to Nicholas and Capital Link team for another fantastic conference. Look, I think all of us here realize that AI is the 300 kilogram silverback in the jungle, and we better take him or her very, very seriously in how we go forward with our businesses. I think it's not a question of how much will AI change our businesses, it's what will it leave behind unchanged. It's that revolutionary. And previously, we've all been investing a lot of time, effort, and money in optimization tools, and those tools are extremely important for the short, medium, and long term. But AI really is revolutionary. And how we use AI sensibly in a controlled way is really, really important for all of us. We've been having a number of meetings, as I'm sure all of you have too, in our business for about the last year as to how we approach AI and how we integrate AI in our business. And I found when I left that topic to our IT specialists, they were looking at how AI can further optimize or change the actual processes that we do that exist now. And I said, stop. AI not only optimizes the processes, but will change the entire process. And our mandate, our challenge, our target is to use AI to completely change the way we do business in the next 12 months. It's as simple and as straightforward as that. If we do anything less, we'll find ourselves on the backside of the wave of change. And whereas optimization was something that we could all perhaps afford to look at and cherry pick as to which optimization tool was best for our business, I think with AI, if we take a wait and see approach that was mentioned on one of the last panels, I think when we open our eyes, we'll be looking at a landscape which resembles Mars and nothing like the world we live in today. So AI really is really, really important that we really get stuck in and that we look at AI as truly revolutionary and, as I said, not play it down in any shape or form.
Thanks a lot, Mark. I mean, that sounds that you really put a lot of value into digitalization and AI. So also coming from a tech background, that's nice words in my ears. Over to you, Tim. Are you seeing the same? picture.
Yes, absolutely. So it's a journey. I would describe it as a journey we are in. And if it comes to AI, how we see it today. So digitalization, years back we talked about digitalization, but this is, let's say, a general term. There are so many developments recently which make which offer so much opportunities if it comes to implement within your organization, and I would say you simply have no choice. Either you try to adapt, or the industry or the train is just leaving without you. So, and over all these years, we have of course seen first things which you could work on. If it comes to our organization, it was more data warehousing in the beginning to make use out of data and use smarter ways to find the right information in this. Then, of course, we have seen the bots coming in, RPAs, which helped you to a certain extent. And now with agentic AI or AI agents, it's just moving boundaries. And as Mark said, so you can, of course, try to improve the process, but this will always be incremental, right? So, but what AI offers to you, if you understand this, and this is where we are then with the next problem. So, as you said, talking to the IT people or those who understand AI are usually not those who run the day-to-day business. So, it really takes time to understand what is really the potential. But if you have figured out, and for our organization, it took quite some time, but now understanding the potential, it's really moving boundaries. And if you talk about moonshot thinking, for example, it really accelerates whatever you want to do.
Can I just very quickly just add one more thing, just to give an example. We're lucky enough to have a partnership with CETA that really governs the whole IT software landscape in the aviation business. And through our partnership with CETA SmartSea, we've got some really first-class advice on AI, where the aviation industry, as in many other ways, is ahead of the maritime industry. When talking to one of CETA's partners and SmartSea's partners in this advice that we were collating on AI, the CEO of one of the companies said to me, Mark, in 1 year, you will have more virtual employees, AI virtual employees, in your crewing department than actual employees. These employees will have personalities. They'll work 24/7. They'll never have a day off sick. They'll never ask for a pay rise. They will be able to call the clients, interact with the clients, know everything about the clients, learn about the clients as they go forward, and give the clients a much, much, much better service than your existing employees. And chances are, within 2 years, those virtual employees will be talking to virtual clients. And that really shocked me, because the time frame in this wasn't 10 years. The time frame was 12 months, and talking to virtual employees on the other side in 12 months thereafter. And we better, as an industry, get on board and get familiar with this new world order, or we really will, as Tim said, the train will have left the station. It's that fast, and it's happening that fast. And generative AI is just that. It's generating at a terrific pace. So it's not, as I said, cherry picking what optimization tool. You've got to be on the front lip of this wave and see the ride through to the end.
Completely agree with Mark. It's working? Yeah. Completely agree with Mark, echoing what he says. I think that it's just going to change the cost structure, right? So it's going to change how people are working. It's going to extend their capabilities. So instead of replacing them, and it will replace some of the tasks and some of the jobs, but basically what it's going to do, it's going to leave more time for the leaders to take the strategic decisions, to understand how to move the company forward. And to the repetitive type of task, I think this is what is going to completely change. And it's going to do that both on the ships, because the ships are becoming more connected to the cloud, so you have more access to data than you used to had before. But it's going to do it also in the office. It's going to provide better service to their customers. Exactly like Mark said, it's going to be agents that can pull now data very quickly, seamlessly, from any data source that you have today in the company. So let's say, you know, your ship is now trading in a spot market, and you have someone that is coming to do an inspection and is asking questions, all the data will be completely available in a click of a button or with just one line of ask. So completely a big change, I think, that's going to happen in the industry because of that.
And seen from you, Angus.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Mark, you mentioned the wave of change that we're seeing now. So one thing I think is interesting is in the 50s and 60s, the first companies that really adopted computers and, you know, what we would now call digitalization and optimization were banks and insurance companies predominantly. And much as this will shock you, the primary reason why they did that is because these banks and insurance companies could make money this way, crazy as that might sound. And now, I think that's very pertinent to where we are today in shipping, in that the banks and the insurance companies had found a way of directly monetizing these processes. They could own the competitive advantage that they gained through these processes. If today you are a ro-ro company, you probably have a very integrated setup. You probably do all your own operations. You probably pay for your own fuel. You probably have very supportive customer-facing clients, which is why you hear Andreas on the last panel having ordered 12 dual-fuel ammonia ships. Fantastic. Amazing. If you are your average bulker company, and so I don't get lynched, it may be that we don't have, it's quite likely that we don't have any average bulker company people in this room. Your average bulker company, probably the majority of your ships are time chartered out. Perhaps you're trading in difficult ports. The benefits of digitalization are very fragmented for you. And as a result, what I see doing this daily, and I think what many of us probably see, is that we are, and this becomes quite scary, we are starting to see a sort of two-tier system when it comes to digitalization. We have the companies that are rapidly grasping this as a point of competitive advantage, who are way ahead of this wave of change. And then we also have those companies that are lagging significantly behind. Now, that's normal in any industry. The big concern that we have today, right now, is that we have this great looming threat / opportunity, which is the regulations and the net zero targets, which for the companies that are digitizing right now and at the end of the day are seeing the money come out of it, either now or tomorrow or in 10 years' time, for them, these targets and this prospect is a great opportunity, and they're grasping it. And for those who are being left behind, then it is a noose that's tightening. So I think it's very clear that there are huge benefits that some companies are seeing, and those companies that aren't set up, that don't have the right, aren't in the right sector, it's much more challenging.
Okay, Josh, can I just, because now you're seeing the expectations, this industry will change completely. And normally we see shipping as a rather conservative business with changing incrementally. And with lots of regulations and a lot of worry, are we doing the right things in the right way? And now we're in a changing industry. Are you worried about all these things that are going to happen? Or, I mean, it will come very fast, apparently.
Yeah, I would say autonomy in shipping and autonomous ships are all but an inevitability at this point. They're coming down the pipeline. They're already here. And being on the regulatory side, the Liberian Registry, being the largest registry in the world, we have an interesting position where we sit both with the IMO in terms of regulations development and then also with our ship owners trying to, you know, ensure that they're complying with these regulations. But as you can see, even just listening to everyone else on the panel, a lot of the developments are moving faster than, you know, regulations can even keep up with. And in order to counteract that and be able to support, development and safe commercialization for some of these technologies. At the registry, we're engaged heavily in joint industry and development projects. We work with a lot of our shipbuilders and ship owners in order to put together agreements in principle for some of the technologies they're putting out. An example, late last year, we worked with HD Hyundai and their internal AI software development team, Avicus, and issued an agreement in principle based on their remote control and autonomous navigation software. And things like that are an extremely helpful stopgap in between when large-scale regulatory sweeping movements from the IMO, let's say, start to pass. So I think as this entire industry is rocketing forward, it's important to keep engagement with regulatory bodies, with shipbuilders, and ultimately with the IMO as a governing oversight body, to be able to keep up with the regulations development rather than just answer or expect them to answer when these regulations come kicking down their door.
With respect, I think the IMO is probably the last organization adapted to dealing with the pace of change of AI that the AI is bringing in. This is just too fast, and we haven't got years. We haven't got months. We have to change now. I think just taking up on something that Yarden mentioned earlier on, the advantage of AI is that whereas before we have various optimization tools that look at what we do and how we can do it better and more cost effectively and quicker, etc. Now with AI, and we've never really been able to harvest all of that data and utilize that harvested data, now we have the ability to do what we were doing before and use the data and collate the data in a very efficient, fast manner. So we never were able to join up the optimization with the harvesting of data and then doing things better. We didn't have time to do that. AI achieves that. And that's the real change here. And same with your tool, Orca, which also utilizes AI. It's this use of data. The question then is, how much data do you allow your particular system to look at and harvest? And that's what we're looking at, the whole issue of captive AI. Do you want to open your entire organization up to the worldwide AI opportunities, or do you want to set up a captive, which is something that most companies are going down, really, really important to look at as well. But as I said, it really is moving far too fast for the IMO to get a grip on this.
Okay, it seems that some of you believe that some companies will utilize this technology and others might fall behind. So that might leave some of the audience here a bit nervous. Are they staying on the station when the train is leaving, or will they be on the train? Could you give a little guideline of this new technology that in one hand, we have seen it, we have maybe played with ChatGPT, we know a bit about it on one side, but on the other side, it seems that there are endless opportunities. And how do you capture all these opportunities? Which one to select, how to do? Can you give a little advice to the audience, Tim?
Yes, absolutely. And as I said earlier, it's a journey. And the earlier you start, the less tools or things you have which supports you. And even though it sounds a little bit rude that the train started, but that was just the first train, right? The next train is coming in 5 minutes. You board it and you have a lot of tools available which were not there when the first train departed, right? So this is at least my learning, that over all these years, it's like leaving a port, right, open sea, and then you have the radar screen and no reflections. So, and then one day the first reflection is coming and you see, okay, then the vector is getting closer and you are trying to identify what is this. And this was mainly our journey in the beginning. And now when we see what is available, we have, of course, understood what it means, right? And this is for, and what Mark said is virtual employees or AI agents are talking to AI agents, or they are working in a team. I have read recently in Harvard Business Review that we will have hybrid organizations in the future, right? Where we have the human beings working together with the AI agents. But back to the question, if you need to be scared when you're not yet there. So as technology is evolving so fast, there is at the end, and this I guess is a problem of the supplier as well, due to the development speed, staying ahead of the wave is very difficult. So what does it mean as well that even if you have started late, you just adapt because everything is there, right? But implementing it into the organization, I would say, is the biggest challenge because you need to understand for yourself where it really adds value, right? And my learning is that usually those who understand the technology and those who work in the day-to-day business are not speaking the same language. And this takes the most time to bridge this gap. Once you have achieved this, then you start going forward jointly. So it's, I wouldn't say you need to be scared if you are not yet on the journey or if you haven't started tremendously, but it all gets so easily accessible the next day. So that's also the advantage. Is there really an advantage if you're a tech company? How long are you really forward, right? And one have the other followed you. And so from that point of view, I think you need the even though we have AI agents in the organization in the future, we still have human beings. And the biggest struggle, if you're getting older, is to understand what is happening. And as a leader, it's always good to understand what is happening in your organization. So don't be scared, open-minded, talk to those who have started the journey already. And then it's same with decarbonization. There, on the long run, there is no choice. You need to adapt your organization because the savings or the increase of efficiency, speed, quality, what Mark said, 24/7, that's just what you need to go for.
Can I just add, don't be scared or don't be very scared, be very excited, because it is an incredible opportunity. When we spoke to SmartSea at the start of this whole AI process, for me, being an ex-lawyer, a leopard won't change his spots. I wanted to have some governance around this because all of our employees were extolling the virtues of ChatGPT and other AI tools and mechanisms that were available. And I was very, very frightened that data that we had could find itself on the World Wide Web and elsewhere. So having governance and having policies that can be wrapped around what is an amazing opportunity was the first step. And so that's what we did. And I would encourage anybody who's listening to this now, get your governance, your internal governance in place, first of all. Get your policies in place, first of all. Because an employee that thinks he or she is doing the company a favor by going on ChatGPT and finding out whole new potential processes could actually be exposing your organization hugely. So governance was the first thing. Then, as Tim said, taking perhaps a non-IT view at where you want to be as a business and how you want to use AI to get there and remain in the driving seat. I think the fear with AI is that AI becomes the process itself and becomes the driver. No, we have to stay the driver. And AI has to remain a tool, but it can very easily get out of control if we give up the steering wheel.
Just to add on that, if we can agree that in 5 years, companies that will adopt AI will have an unfair competitive advantage. And again, I'm not objective, right? Because we are a technology company, but I say that you need to adopt AI or actually think about adopting AI. And a part of the adopting AI is also not just what to do, but also what not to do, what not to adopt, how to use it, do it as quickly as possible. The reason behind it is that it's a lot about change of management. It's a lot about what type of people you need to hire. Exactly as Mark said, you bring in the IT, you think, you know, they are the expert, but they don't understand actually how they need to adopt it, how they need to incorporate that into the business processes. So eventually it's all about the CEO, the leadership of the CEO, on how to incorporate that. So you need to trial it as quickly as possible, feel it, and then based on your experience, you'll know what to do. But you know, the shipping industry is a relatively traditional industry, like many times to sit on the fence. In this time, it's coming, and you should try it as quickly as possible and try to adopt it and see how to manage it into your processes.
Yeah, and Tim actually used a pretty good metaphor in terms of leaving port and having open seas. And that's a pretty good metaphor for AI because the limitations are basically not there. It's an unknown technology, and you know, there's everything that we could use it for. And you know, a lot of people on the panel talk about how it's going to change the organization or the industry, but it's actually going to change shipping itself. And when we look at, you know, where that's going, it's not just, you know, waypoints or navigational software. It's every operational aspect on the ship and even in the engine room. So potential digital chief engineers optimizing not just fuel savings, but, you know, the way we're even going about, you know, transferring over everything that we do, and it's going to automate everything in that capacity and, you know, more or less allow for a much more optimized, you know, space and not just, you know, right on time delivery or something like that. So it is a pretty unique spot trying to look into regulations and where we're able to sit in terms of, you know, seeing how many different avenues that companies can go down in terms of utilizing it.
I think also that one thing that we have all said is this concept of adopting AI, whereas in reality, I don't think any company should look to adopt AI. You know, we are looking to solve specific problems, and of course, we all agree, I know. But in terms of these problems that AI can help with, AI is a tool for getting the best insights out of huge amounts of data. And there are many, many different sorts of AI. And generative AI, of course, which is what we're all now suddenly very familiar with, is only one application of AI. What I'm seeing is that many shipping companies, and again, it does depend on the immediate benefits or even the medium-term benefits that they're likely to get out of it, which depends a lot on how their particular sector is set up and how they trade, etc. But what I'm seeing is that many companies are starting to identify discreetly the problems that they want to solve. And it's then a question of joining the dots and saying, actually, AI can help me solve that problem. So the first step is not to say we should be adopting AI. It's to discreetly say, what do you want to achieve? Which, as Jarden said, comes down often to very senior leadership. And then having an open mind to adopt the newest approaches, whatever they may be, to solve that problem. But the first step is saying, this is what we want to achieve. And many companies are still at that stage.
Okay. Can I change a little bit the subject? Because if AI, and we focus a lot on AI and less on digitalization, but let's stay on that topic. AI is to a huge extent based on data. And now I worked in the industry for 35 years, and data has always been a challenge. It's not standardized. The quality is not as good as we would like it to be. The crew that inputs a lot of the data are not trained well enough, not careful enough, or for whatever reason, the data sometimes end up being a bit messed. And now we rely on machines, on agents that are using this data to come up with decisions, maybe even to do the job. Is that a problem?
No, if I can answer that. We recently went through going through a joint venture with Abu Dhabi Ports. Abu Dhabi Ports chose us not because Colombia is the best ship management or maritime service platform out there. I happen to believe it is one of the best, but that wasn't the reason. It was because of our partnership in SmartSea, as I said. And Abu Dhabi Ports saw the ability or the potential of AI to provide an IT backbone to the entire logistics space using artificial intelligence, using the technologies that SmartSea and CETA are able to bring. If you just imagine you are able to use all of the data from the moment a product leaves the factory to its delivery to the port, its onboarding on board a vessel, it's coming into the port, transferred to a train, a plane, haulage, etc., and final delivery to the customer. If you were able to have an IT backbone that spanned the entire logistics framework, what sort of optimization would you be able to achieve? It would be fantastic. We are just scratching at the surface of optimization at the moment with all these great tools that we have, because we're so insular, we're so splendidly isolated from the rest of the logistics community. But if you could have a means of harvesting that data, looking macro and having a machine, people can't do that. People don't have the capacity to do that or the tools to do that. But what an amazing potential that would be. And that is why Abu Dhabi Ports chose us. That is why this is so important, that we have the means to do that going forward. If we don't, other players in the logistics environment and landscape will do it for us. So we better had, and we have the ambition and the dynamic and the flexibility and the agility, as I think Dr. Bornheim mentioned at the beginning, to do just that. So let's grasp that and let's lead.
Lars, you raised another problem in the industry, right? That the data is not accurate. I would argue that AI can solve that as well. So AI can find anomalies, it can understand where the data is not accurate. If you train it on a data set that is accurate enough, and then you basically train it to understand to find anomalies, then it will be able to find it, it will be able to clean the data, and then you will have a better data set to use it for other purposes. We do it internally as well, all the time.
And maybe an example, what we have... this is not a maritime industry subject, so any organization has it. You have, for example, invoices coming in which have no reference to the PO, right? So if it's shipping or if it's airline or if it's any industry. So, and what can IA do is that, same like human being, right? Currently, the human being is reading it and trying to figure out what is it. Now, in organizations, the AI agents are reading this. And based on the content and based what they learned over time, they understand what is this all about. So, and if, because quality of data, if you get an invoice without a reference to the PO, that's a minus on the quality of the invoice, right? So, and as Mark and Jordan said, the AI is then picking this up, reading it like a human being, and then trying, in brackets, figuring out what is the content and what is the account code. And then it's giving you either you let it give you a recommendation in percentage, which is the right account code based on the content, or once you have tested is enough, you estimate that it's as good as the human being and you just let the process go. So that's available today, right? So saying this, data quality has never been a subject, but with the right use of AI, you can... they figure out what is wrong, right? Where does it make sense?
So Tim and Jordan bring up fantastic points in terms of, you know, clean data going into AI, because actual AI, artificial intelligence, is able to understand what you're looking to do and then make decisions and clean up data for you to get there. Whereas, you know, just process improvement or automation of process, if you put in, you know, data that's not necessarily cleaned or not necessarily understood, you're going to get the same result out. You're not going to get a perfect answer. So I think that changes the way that we have to deal with AI, because we're not looking at just, you know, digitalization and process improvement. We're actually looking at an intelligent, you know, potentially sentient thing that understands and knows how to make a decision based on wanting to achieve in a final result. So instead of just, you know, helping navigation through like waypoints, we're looking at being able to actually make navigational decisions based on understanding of rules of the road and then, you know, potential outcomes and decide it as if it's a human being or, you know, a captain on the bridge.
Can I, because we have only 5 minutes left, can I
just give a counterpoint to what we've been saying?
Quick here? One.
which is that I said earlier, I don't think we necessarily have any average bulker companies here in the audience. You are the sharp point of the digitalization movement. You are here in this room, and that's why we're talking about AI. At the same time, it is worth remembering that probably 90% of the ships out there on the sea communicate with shore once a day via an email, which is manually filled in. Now, you can do AI stuff with that. You can. But we must keep focusing on grassroots digitalization of the global fleet. That really is where everything starts. And all of us here on the panel today will have faced infinite problems with the quality of the data coming out of ships. So whilst it's fantastic because the real impact comes when you do cool stuff with this data, then as shipping companies and overall as an industry, we must keep focusing on getting that good, high quality data. Treat them like factories, not like tractors.
Okay, on that note, a bit provocative here in the end, because we have now discussed all these enormous possibilities that exist with this technology. But let me take a very practical example, the electronic logbooks that was approved by IMO 3-4 years ago. We have still flag states not accepting electronic logbooks. We have still crew members hesitant to use these kind of technologies and prefer the paper-based ones. We have still ports that are reluctant to accept the results of the electronic logbook, so we have to print them in the same exact format as the paper ones to pretend they were the paper ones. So while we are discussing these enormous potentials, we are still facing very practical challenges with even what I will claim is a very, very simple digitalization in shipping. Any comments on that?
I would say you cannot solve all in one. You start there where you have the maximum influence, and then you play on time, and one or the other day, the authorities you mentioned will adapt. My comment.
Yeah, some of us are still writing letters or postcards or birthday cards, and the majority of us are sending emails. You know, I don't think that a particular example should be evidence of a slow pace or lack of enthusiasm for that pace. I think AI, we really need, whether we're however far we're down the digitalization route, and there's no doubt the two do live together. Coming to your point, AI cannot be ignored, and I think when we hold our thoroughbred horse and release it, the only decision we have to decide is: do we let it run across the prairie freely, or do we let it run within a field? And how big is that field? And that, for me, is the real key critical issue here. How big do we make our captive AI, or do we open it up completely?
Yeah, and I would say it's a little bit of the leading the horse to water and you know, not forcing them to drink, but it's more if the barrier to entry in people's minds is, you know, higher than the actual return that they think they're seeing on maybe a logbook or a single digitalization example, they're not going to want to put in the effort to do that. But the more advanced this technology gets, the more returns they're going to see, the easier their life is going to get, and, you know, the more worth it going over that barrier to entry will eventually be, and eventually it's just not really going to be a choice either. So
I can't comment on logbooks, but I can say that I'm in the industry for a couple of years, and I see a massive change in adoption in AI, and you can see it from, you know, the voyage optimization, vessel performance, as ships are starting to collect more data so you can get more accurate models. Automated watch keeper, something that we are providing that is becoming a part of the standard of the day-to-day operations. And I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. Also ChatGPT that is becoming more available and people are using it today in the office. I think what is more exciting is looking forward and see what is going to come up. And I think on the ship side, definitely autonomous ships. We see it's coming, and people all the time asking me, you know, if it's going to replace people. No, it's not going to replace people. It's going to extend the work. It's going to provide a lot of value to them. It's going to reduce the cost. It's going to improve their capabilities to take better decisions. And on the office side, for sure, agents, that will provide better service to your customers. It will reduce the cost of legal. It will reduce the cost of accounting. So it's really going to change entirely the cost structure. And, you know, it's just a matter of a couple of years as we're going to see it more adopted. So not every use case will adopt, but in general, we see more adoption and it's just going to accelerate.
And with these last words from you, Jaten, I think it's the time has passed and it's time to thank you all for joining. Thanks a lot for all your wisdom, and I hope you grasp a little bit of it here in the audience.